You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good morning. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. Before we jump into the hour today, I should let you know Praxis received support from Puff and Glass Studios, a purveyor of functional glass art and smoking accessories. 8 locations in the state of Washington. Information is available at 509-328-0661 and online at puffandglassstudios.com. And as I said, you're listening to Praxis. It is Monday, August 25th already, and I am here live in the studio with Jace Bilenga, who is an organizer with the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. And we're going to be talking about an event that's coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, August 26th, if I have the dates right, at 11 a.m. That the Lummi tribe, the Lummi community is sponsoring. And we're going to talk about that and how we can not dig up and export coal in the U.S. and so much more. How's it going?
Good. Good morning. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's about time.
Thanks for having me. Like, yeah, it has been a while.
I feel like I should have had you on by now. But do you want to just talk a little bit about what you do with
sure.
the Sierra Club, who you are, how
yeah,
you got
sure.
involved in that kind of work?
Yeah, that'd be great. So for those who don't know the Sierra Club is the oldest and largest environmental nonprofit in the United States. And we were founded in 1896 by John Muir, and a big part of the formation of the Sierra Club was the founding of the National Park System. So many people enjoy those parks, and much great thanks to the Sierra Club as well. But over the years, we've grown to work on a number of different issues, and our biggest campaign right now is the Beyond Coal campaign, and we're working to basically do whatever we can to move away from burning coal for electricity and towards more sustainable, renewable energy and energy efficiency improvements, things like that. The burning of coal is the greatest source of greenhouse gases, of carbon dioxide. That's disrupting our climate. And also, it is terribly polluting when you mine it, and when you burn it, and when you get rid of the ash that's associated with the burning, and a number of other different problems with the burning of coal. And we're doing a great job, actually. Almost one third of the coal-fired power plants in the United States have been retired or scheduled to be retired, including 2 coal-fired power plants in the Northwest. There's 1 remaining in Washington and 1 remaining in Oregon. And both of those are already scheduled to be decommissioned very, very quickly. So part of the interesting problem with that, though, is because of coal is declining so much in the United States, the coal industry is looking for something to do with the coal in the United States that's in the ground. They're trying to find a market for it. And so there are coal export proposals in the Northwest, proposals to build massive export facilities on the coast. And if those were built coming through here in the Spokane and Inland Northwest communities, we would see doubling of our train traffic just for coal. So in other words, we have about 50 trains a day, give or take a handful, that come through downtown Spokane and the surrounding communities. And we would have an additional 50, 60 trains per day just for coal to be shipped over to Asian markets to be burned. But there's been unprecedented grassroots opposition to these projects over the last 3-plus years. And we're doing a great job of making political hell for these companies that are used to just being able to do whatever they want, mm-hmm. pretty much, and getting away with externalizing all of their costs. Not all of them, but lots of them.
Most of them, yeah.
Most of them.
Because they get to move on after they're done mining a mountain or an area, mm-hmm. and the people who live there generally don't get to move on and leave, you know? So,
correct.
that's part of that issue. But there's a lot of visitors today. But so the goal, I'm assuming, I don't want to project what the goal is, but the goal is to leave the stuff in the ground, right?
Yes, yes.
To get to the point where...
Right. We can do a lot better. You know, coal is... did a great job of getting us, you know, through the Industrial Revolution and modernizing our society. Yeah, very great. Really, you know, pull it out of the ground, burn it, and you create electricity. And if you kind of ignore all of those human health and environmental impacts, it's not a bad thing. But unfortunately, it's hurting the planet that we depend on. And also, you know, causing asthma and putting mercury in our fish, a number of different things. So if we don't move beyond that to something else, then we're just going to cause ourselves a whole lot of problems. And we can do a lot better, too. I mean, wind energy, solar energy are becoming increasingly affordable and also... create a lot of jobs, which is amazing, which is awesome. Also, energy efficiency. If we just had, you know, if we went around and made energy efficiency improvements to our homes, you know, insulation, light bulbs, something simple like that, but you can do a lot more even. That creates a ton of jobs as well. And so we're not in the business of, you know, trying to say, well, you can't burn coal anymore. Sorry, you can't, you don't. There aren't any more jobs for people. Like, no, we're not. We're more practical than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess I want to ask you first about the event tomorrow.
Sure.
Who's invited? What's it all about? Where, when, why?
Sure. Yeah. No, it's a really amazing event. I think it's probably one of the coolest things I've been able to be a part of through this work. And so I would prioritize trying to make it. It is tomorrow, the 26th at 11 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. John's on the Lower South Hill. And it's a totem pole blessing ceremony. So members of the Lummi community, the Lummi tribe is their land right now is over near Bellingham and would be directly impacted by the largest of these coal export proposals. And so they are very excited about doing whatever they can to stop this. And so they carved a totem pole specifically to raise awareness about these coal export projects, not just the one for the on their lands, but in a bigger sense, you know, they're concerned about the environment and the planet and communities along the way. And so this traditional storytelling medium, the totem pole, they carved it to tell the story physically on the pole about this fight for coal against coal exports. And then they're bringing the totem pole along the route of the coal export facilities. And then they're actually so they came last fall
to Canada Island, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And they had a totem pole then to raise awareness just about coal exports. This totem pole was carved also to raise awareness about development of crude oil in the Bakken region, which is in North Dakota, and also tar sands development in Alberta. So they're going to end up bringing the totem pole all the way up to Alberta, and they're going to gift the totem pole to the Beaver Lake Cree up in Alberta. I believe I said that right. I can look it up. But in a nutshell, the event tomorrow, Tuesday the 26th at 11 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. John's, is a blessing ceremony. So we're inviting the community to bless the totem pole. And by blessing the totem pole has more significance. And it's going to be a really amazing event because the faith community has been very involved with making this totem pole journey and blessing ceremonies possible. And actually... the faith community, you know, it's at the Cathedral of St. John's, and we're going to have a number of faith leaders, including a couple bishops there that are going to be part of the program and actually presenting a very cool letter to the members of the Lummi community that carve the totem pole, and we could get into that a little bit more later. But, you know, we're going to have also City Council President Ben Stuckert's going to say a couple words of welcoming and show his support for their fight against this export facility. And yeah, it's just going to be a really, really cool event, bringing together, you know, community, the faith community and the Native community, you know, not in pretty recent past, you know, weren't really getting along, you know, lots of tragedy, lots of pain. And so to come together and to stand up and say, no, we're not going to let this project happen and impact your ancestral lands, and we're with you in solidarity is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think both of those groups, there's a significant call to do environmental work. I mean, when people say that it's not possible to have a functional economy that's also sustainable and in harmony with nature, you have to kind of point to tens of thousands of years of societies that did that, you know? Mm-hmm. So we have experience, traditional experience there. And then I can't play it on the radio because it's not safe, but Louis C.K., the comedian, has a great piece about Christianity and environmentalism,
right,
where it boils down to him saying, if you believe that God made this for you, shouldn't you be respectful and,
right,
and take care of it and not trash it? So
yeah, exactly.
It's good to see both of those communities kind of stepping up, and then obviously everybody else being invited to join in. So
yeah, and it's going to be a really, you know, come, it's free. It's going to be a beautiful day. I'm really excited. I don't have to scramble to get the event inside the cathedral because outside there's a nice, really nice lawn. And, you know, come out 11 a.m. till 12:30 p.m. You know, bring your whole office if you have to. Just, you know, close the doors, lock it, come out, have a really amazing experience blessing this totem pole. And, you know, it's going to be on a flatbed truck that they've been driving it across the country. They were in Billings yesterday, and then 2 days prior, they were in South Dakota with the Yankton Sioux. And then they're, you know, going to be on their way to, excuse me, I'll just pull up the map I've got over here.
Oh, no worries.
Yakima, and then Olympia, Seattle, and then another 8 stops in Canada. It's, yeah. And all this information you can find at totempolejourney.com, mm-hmm, or through the Cole Free Spokane Facebook page. So that's where all the info is. But like I said, free event, very family friendly. The totem pole is going to be up on a truck, and you're going to be able to touch it and interact with it and meet the folks who carved it and everything. You know, we're going to be outside. There's going to be a kind of a couple people speaking, but then it'll be kind of a pretty casual, interactive event. We're going to also give out, we've got these, there's these wonderful, like, 10-page color booklets that explain the whole issue and the whole story about the totem pole journey, and even 2015 calendars with photographs of the carving of the totem pole and the land where the coal export facility would be built.
Cool.
And just all the people involved with the fight against this facility. So
awesome. Yeah. So, and the tie-in, I'm glad to hear that was one of my next questions, is how does the coal fight overlap with fracking, which I know there's also been a lot of Indigenous leadership, mm-hmm, on, and this Bakken crude. And mm-hmm, obviously that's being acknowledged. Is the rail infrastructure the main way that that's being tied together?
Yeah. Yeah. I would, that's a definitely, especially for our community here in Spokane. So there's a huge boom of oil development in the Dakotas, in North Dakota primarily. The Bakken Shale region is being fracked, hydraulically fractured for this really light and flammable crude oil. You know, if you were to put it in a glass jar next to, you know, more conventional crude oil, I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but it looks more like gasoline. So it's very flammable right out of the ground, very explosive right out of the ground, which isn't how you normally think of crude oil. You think of crude oil as kind of like this sludgy black tar that, yes, it's flammable, but it's not going to explode like gasoline. Mm-hmm. And so that Bakken crude oil has been traveling on trains through many communities throughout the United States, and especially you know, our Northwest region and Spokane. Spokane's on the rail line funnel, as we call it, where all east-west traffic has to come through here. And if these trains derail, they do explode, and it's very scary. There was a last summer in Quebec, a train full of this crude oil derailed and destroyed an entire small community. That's not an exaggeration at all. I mean, 47 people were killed. I think something like 200 buildings were destroyed. And I remember reading in a news article that they didn't find a couple of the bodies because they were vaporized. So pretty scary stuff. And we need to get that. If that oil is going to be transported through our communities, we definitely need to get it in safer rail cars that are more puncture resistant. Mm-hmm. They're being transported in these .111 rail cars that are
the black cylindrical.
Yes,
ones,
yes.
Right?
So they're yes. You know, usually it's a unit train you're going to see full of Bakken crude oil, meaning it's just one thing. So it'll be a mile and a half long, and you know,
which seems black totally legit. Tanks. It seems like there probably wouldn't be a chain reaction if one exploded, right?
Oh gosh.
I mean, I work about 30 yards from the railroad tracks, and mm-hmm. Whenever I see one of those pass, I just think, flames 70 stories high.
Yeah.
Sure hope that doesn't tip over.
Right, exactly. And you know, for there's actually a little sign on the side of the trains, and the code on the sign says 1267, and then you know it's that particular crude oil. It's not very big, though. It's maybe 5 inches by 5 inches, and they have it. It's like a diamond with a little flame on top of the 1267, so that theoretically, you know, anybody responding to some kind of emergency knows what's in it. So these issues are very related between coal and oil transport, though, primarily because of rail safety. So coal trains are uncovered. So you can, if you see a train going by and there's like a little black bread loaf on top of it, that's coal. And coal dust falls off of the trains and has been shown to destabilize rail tracks. So if you have coal destabilizing rail tracks, and then you want to put more coal on the rail lines, and then you want to put more oil on those same, more explosive trains on those same now destabilized tracks, we're just asking for problems. Mm-hmm. So the coal dust has been shown to fall off the tracks in huge numbers. So, you know, up to 500 pounds per car. So these trains have about 110 cars. So for each trip it makes from, you know, the Montana and Wyoming region where it's mined to the coast, about 500 pounds times 110 cars falls off and it goes into our waterways. We're currently suing over that coal dust falling into our waterways and using the Clean Water Act. And the reason it destabilizes the tracks, roughly speaking, I mean, it's a very powdery, soft, you know, kind of like charcoal. And so it kind of, the really fine powder gets into the ballast rock of the rail lines and can kind of almost lubricate it, if you will.
Wow. So it's a recipe for disaster, basically.
Yes, it's a recipe for disaster, and we need to make sure that, you know, we're going through the environmental review process of these coal export facilities, and it's going to, you know, take a number of years, which we're happy that our state government is taking the time to do a very long and thorough environmental impact study or statement, if you will, about these projects. And but there's public input times. There's times in the environmental review process where public input is requested, and it is our responsibility as a community to give our concerns during that process. And so we've had two public hearings over the last couple years about these coal export facilities. We're anticipating another one in the spring, this coming spring of 2015. And we really need to make sure that our communities are educated about the issue, and if they're concerned, that they know where and when to go and express their concerns, so that our these costs associated with these projects aren't just externalized onto the people.
Yeah. Well, and I'd hope, I mean, I know that at the ones this past spring, I want to say,
or fall.
Thank you. That's the season I'm looking for. Were, I mean, people showed up overwhelmingly to say, no, we don't want this.
Yes. Correct.
Right. I mean, it's a very imbalanced, there's not a lot of people who aren't part of the industry. Safe to say almost no one who's not part of the industry who are saying, yeah, bring them through. I mean, I see the occasional letter to the editor that says these crazy environmentalists are going to take our jobs and destroy the economy. But
yeah. And that's just inaccurate. I mean, the Power Pass Coal Coalition, of which the Sierra Club is a part of, it was created to oppose these coal export facilities. And it's not just environmentalists. There are faith organizations involved. There are health organizations involved. There's this organization called the Whatcom Docks. Whatcom County is where the coal export facility near Bellingham would be built, or would be built if it was approved. And it's over 100 doctors that are getting, you know, actively involved with this issue to try to oppose it because of the health risks associated with the trains themselves, the climate disruption, etc. So it's not just environmentalists.
Awesome. And I mean, even if it were just environmentalists, who should we better trust about issues about the planet, you know? But maybe that's just me being crazy. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, talking with Jace Bailenga. He's an organizer with the Beyond Coal campaign at the Sierra Club. We're talking about the event tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. John, which is on...
It's 12th and Grand.
12th and Grand. The big Gothic cathedral. You can't really miss it. It's the only giant Gothic cathedral on the South Hill. Yeah. So
that I know of.
Maybe in Spokane.
It's going to be great, yeah. It's a totem pole blessing ceremony to raise awareness about coal export and oil export proposals. It's free, open to the public, and it's going to be a really a great experience. Great weather as well, so take a nice long lunch. And then if you want to look up more information, totempolejourney.com. You can call my office at 509-209-2395. Or Coal Free Spokane on Facebook.
Great. And I'll share that page on the Praxis page, which is facebook.com/Praxis Radio, where I've already shared the event. So you can RSVP. I'd imagine it'd be kid friendly.
Oh, very kid friendly.
If you want to get your kids engaged in some some activism and some, you know, arts exposure, it's a multiple purpose in one way to have a little educational fun time before school starts again.
Yeah, definitely. And there's photos from the Billings and Dakota totem pole visits up online if you want to see what the totem pole looks like and everything and kind of what to expect. It'll be a really community-oriented, you know, kind of social event, and you can interact with the totem pole, touch it, and it's a pretty... Pretty cool. Beautiful piece.
Right on. And did you want to share that letter?
Sure. Okay. So as I mentioned before, the faith community and the Native American community are coming together at this event in a pretty big way. We've got, you know, the members of the Lummi community who carved this totem pole to raise awareness. And then leaders from the local faith community. There's going to be Bishop Wagner of the Episcopal Diocese of Spokane and Reverend Martin Wells, who's the bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America for Eastern Washington and North Idaho. And they're going to be there presenting a letter of apology, I guess you could call it in one word, to the Lummi and other tribal members. So, you know, we're going to have I believe, leaders from the Spokane Tribe of Indians and some other regional tribal members as well. So I can go ahead and read this letter. It's just a couple paragraphs, but I think it'll give a good sense of what the event is all about. So it's a public declaration to the tribal councils and traditional spiritual leaders of the native peoples of the Northwest. And this from August 2014. In 1987 and again in 1997, bishops and denominational executives of churches in the Northwest offered letters of apology to the indigenous peoples of our region. These letters acknowledge the historical disrespect of traditional Native American spiritual practices and traditions. In those letters, the leaders of our denominations promised to honor and defend the rights of Native peoples, including access and protection of sacred sites, and to end political and economic injustice against tribal communities. In this decade, a new threat has arisen against Native peoples: the mining, transport, burning, and disposal of fossil fuels. Proposed coal export terminals would damage Native fisheries by protected, proposed coal export terminals would damage Native fisheries protected by long-standing treaties and poison our shared air and water. Coal trains servicing these terminals would cut across lands sacred to indigenous peoples and impact the health of those communities. In this generation, we also acknowledge that the mining and burning of fossil fuels creates a terrible threats of climate disruption, ocean acidification, and pollution to the harm of all God's creation, especially the poorest. Tribal leaders have asked us to keep our past promises and to stand with them in defense of their sacred lands and fishing rights. And so we call upon the Northwest Congressional Delegation and other elected officials, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Department of the Interior, and all people of goodwill to uphold the treaty rights of Native communities of the Northwest. We ask that all environmental and cultural harm to Native lands and peoples be considered in making public policy decisions about the mining, transport, and export of coal and other fossil fuels. As religious leaders, we call for the protection of the life we have been given and the earth we all call home. Our greatest commandment is to love our neighbor as ourselves. Putting this ethic into action, we stand in solidarity with our neighbors, with our Native neighbors, to safeguard the traditional lands, waters, and sacred sites of their people from destruction. So, pretty heavy letter, for lack of a better word. And so those two bishops will be, Bishops Wagner and Wells, will be presenting that letter at this event. And then there's, you know, another 10 or so religious leaders, bishops, et cetera, that are going to be a part of the letter presentation at other totem pole blessings along the route.
Cool. Yeah, it's good to have that that script flipped around a little bit and hear some of these big institutions that have often in the past maybe held back positive changes being on the right side of a change and saying, actually, you know, if our whole huge institution can shift like this, you know, and apologize for what we've done in the past, we can help. We can help in the future and keep this stuff. There's a lot of good arguments. I mean, there's no, like I said, I don't think there's any valid arguments for continuing to use fossil fuels at all. But here's a question for you. It will eventually be a question. It's going to start as a sentence, but I promise there's going to be a question in there. So it's difficult for someone like me or you. We individually don't want to use fossil fuels, right? But maybe don't have the resources to fully solarize, revamp our home. We're dependent on a private energy provider, Avista in this case, in Spokane, who I think a lot of people are under the impression that we buy predominantly the hydroelectric power from the dam that's, you know, a mile from my house. How is that true, and how can we navigate, you know, as individuals, the institutions that we're kind of forced to buy power from? How do we influence that?
Well, I think the first simplest answer is that we all need to be, you know, we all need to care enough to be more educated. And, you know, they aren't simple issues. I will give, you know, that's definitely the case. It's not, some of this stuff gets kind of complicated quickly if you dive into it. But we need to take the time to understand that it's really important for us to know the facts and make sure that, you know, we trust our sources of information and that we're engaged enough to do something about it. We can't just sit around and be apathetic and say, the political machine is corrupt and not doing anything, and so why bother? You know, no, that's not the way to change things. But so that being said, you know, you mentioned Avista and where we get our power from them. So not many people know, but Avista actually gets about 20% of their electricity from the burning of coal. And most of that comes from a coal-fired power plant in eastern Montana, in Colstrip, Montana. There's a giant coal facility, and they are partial owners of that. So we get electricity all the way from eastern Montana through wires over here. And so Avista isn't, you know, they've got this backbone of coal power. And it would be so much better for our communities and if they would transition away from that burning of coal towards clean energy and energy efficiency. And that is perfectly possible. It's very possible for that to happen. And so Avista is a private company, but they're a monopoly. So they're regulated under the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission. And we're going to actually be shifting also. We're definitely working really hard to ensure that we win the fight on coal exports. That's going to be, that campaign will be another 2 to 5 years, potentially. We're not sure, but we like it to be very long because then we know all of our concerns are addressed. But we're also going to be trying to pressure the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission to make a plan to retire that coal-fired power plant as quickly as possible and replace that power with renewable energy.
Right on. And
and that will create tons of jobs here in Eastern Washington. And that's one thing we really want to emphasize. It's not just a no campaign. We are very poised about creating jobs here in Washington.
And so what's your perspective on renewable? Because I know there's some issues with certain aspects, particularly, you know, something I've read up on a lot. It's difficult because we want to just say, oh, well, we can use solar, but then, you know, the rare earth minerals that need to be mined for mm-hmm. solar. Do you know, are there developments to get around some of that, improve quality of solar, or like what's your pet renewable energy? What do you think are the best ones for this area?
So if solar and wind energy are we'll call them the low hanging fruit of energy choices, then energy efficiency is the fruit on the ground that's almost rotting. I mean, we just have to go around and pick it up off the ground. By just improving, you know, our infrastructure, like our buildings and our houses and stuff like that, by just making improving our energy efficiency. So insulation, better windows, you know, primarily for heating in the winter and things like mm-hmm. that. And
should also save people money.
Right. I mean, so it's going to save people money. You know, obviously you have to invest a little bit on the front end. But if we can find ways to create good incentives to make that kind of stuff happen, we're going to create a lot of jobs too. You know, people making the energy improvements. There's a lot of jobs there, and we can meet a lot of our energy needs by just increasing energy efficiency all around. So that I think is it's like a duh. You know, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you do that? It just doesn't make sense. And for anybody, you know, it's not. we've been kind of talking about this polarization of environment versus economy. And this one's just like a, well, it's just common sense. Why wouldn't you want to improve your energy efficiency to save money and make jobs? And yeah.
Yeah. And is it a better, you know, how's the quality of life for people who are workers installing windows versus in a coal mine?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, don't compare.
And that's one thing that we really need to remember. You know, if people are going to talk about jobs for coal exports, what kind of jobs? You know, do we really want to, have people getting sick working in coal mines, or do we want to find something mm-hmm. better for them to do?
Yeah, which I feel like is something we should have learned by now. I mean, like, I feel like a third of classic country music is about how much it sucks to be a coal miner. You know, like, it's something that's in our cultural understanding. Yeah. Like, being a coal miner is rough. Mm-hmm. And yet we're in 2014 and there's people saying, sure, let's dig up more coal. It's just, it's very bizarre.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah. And, you know, and the folks that work in those mines and everything, they're really great, hardworking Americans. And, you know, let's find them some better work already. And work that doesn't pollute their land and waters around it. You know, this coal strip, coal-fired power facility is huge. I mean, it's over 2,000 megawatts, which is, you know, if I don't go off on a tangent explaining what exactly that means, it might not make much sense to people, but it's huge. It's basically like four coal-fired power plants in one. And yeah, there's fourth. I was just watching a short video that was interviewing a fourth generation rancher whose land is right adjacent to that facility, and his water is getting poisoned from the coal ash ponds that are slowly leaking. So once they burn the coal, they have to do something with all this ash, and it contains all these toxic heavy metals and such. And so they put it in a big pond and just hope that it'll settle and they can just kind of bury it. But it's leaking and poisoning the groundwater for these hardworking ranchers out in eastern Montana. And it's just awful. And, you know, he even talks about, well, I got friends that work over in the coal mine, you know, but they're great people, but shoot, you know, what are they going to do?
So part of what they're going to do is hopefully team up. I mean, we've seen a ton, especially with fracking. A lot of these ranchers, people who are traditionally considered maybe like conservative, mm-hmm. not stereotypical environmentalists, which we touched on earlier, are joining forces to stop all this because mm-hmm. they're realizing it's illogical and
right.
crazy.
Well, and they also can't trust the industry. The corporations that are giving them their jobs will, you know, if they're not doing well financially, they're going to do whatever they can to jump ship and like sell. You know, I don't have the specific examples in my head, but I've seen cases where a coal company is having trouble financially. They like sort of reconsolidate. All of a sudden, the pensions are owned by this other shell company, you know, and then that company goes bankrupt. And what do you know? You've got everybody's pensions are gone.
Mm-hmm.
All these hardworking coal miners are gone.
Yeah.
Pensions are gone.
Yeah. It's the same. It's this attitude of disposability, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, well, maybe the ash will just disappear. Well, you know, these workers will just, they probably won't fight us. So let's do it. So,
yeah.
We should mention again, what we're
yes,
talking
yes,
about
that'd be great.
Today, the event. I'm realizing that time is passing more quickly than I thought.
Know,
so,
I know. So, please join us tomorrow, Tuesday, the 26th at 11 a.m. for a totem pole blessing ceremony. The totem pole was carved to raise awareness about dirty and dangerous coal and oil export projects. And the community is invited to bless the totem pole on its journey from, you know, the Dakotas up to Alberta. And it's from 11 a.m. till 12:30 p.m. at the Cathedral of St. John's, which is up on Grand and 12th. It's going to be a beautiful day. Bring your family. Come on out and join us in a very special event.
Awesome. And I think that brings up, I just think it's so cool. I think it's unfortunate that we have to do, that it exists for us to fight in the first place. But it's so cool that, you know, U.S., Canada, all the way from the West Coast to the East Coast have united around these issues to mm-hmm. really try to stop it at every point, which at the very least, it's I think it's generally, I don't know, you and I might disagree about the, you know, the delaying of the process that is part of the strategy a lot of the time, you mm-hmm. know, delaying the process, doing these environmental impact studies and everything. But in this case, I mean, it's worked so far.
Yes, yes. And actually, last week, Monday, there was actually a huge victory for the coal exports campaign. We've been kind of focusing on there's two large facilities proposed in Washington, but there's one also proposed in Oregon on the Columbia River. And on last Monday, the Oregon Department of State Lands denied a permit that would be used to make a dock for that coal export facility. So they used in a legal way, they said, no, you can't, we're not going to give you this permit, which is unprecedented. You know, these permits don't get denied very often, if at all. Mm-hmm. And some of the reasoning also, to tie it back to this totem pole blessing ceremony, was tribal fishing rights. So the Department of State Lands in Oregon said, no, you can't build this facility on the Columbia River because you're going to impact Yakima and Umatilla fishing rights. And so that's huge. That's just another example of how our grassroots pressure has given us a victory on this. This is the first time we've had a permit denied. There was originally 6 coal export facilities. Right now there's just 3, but the other 3 were just abandoned. You know, the companies changed their mind basically and withdrew their permit application for a number of reasons, but also probably likely because of the political pressure that the communities have been putting on them.
So now those 3, what stage are they in currently?
So for the 2 large facilities proposed in Washington, Cherry Point near Bellingham and the Longview facility, which is, you know, southwest Washington, they're going through a long environmental impact statement process. And it's going to, so there's various points in that process where there's public input requested. We've already had public hearings in Spokane for the scoping of the environmental impact statement. In other words, they asked the community, what do you want us to include in mm-hmm. this environmental impact statement? And hundreds and thousands of people participated in those scoping processes. Actually, the most public participation in such a process in state history. And people asked, you know, hey, I live in Spokane. I live up next to the rail tracks. I want, you know, any of the bad air quality associated with a coal train to be considered in any kind of permit that might be made. So we've had the scoping process. Now the State Department of Ecology is actually doing the study. They're figuring out all those things. And they're going to come out with a draft for that environmental impact statement. And we're anticipating the draft to be released for the Cherry Point proposal this coming spring. Okay. And so there'll be another round of public hearings. And then likely another, you know, handful of months later, we'll have a similar hearing for the Longview facility. So they're kind of 2 separate processes, but they're going to probably come up with a lot of the same answers.
And the answers will, I mean, we can predict that it's going to look bad mm-hmm. because we know there's all of these bad effects. I can't really imagine the Department of Ecology doing that study and saying, eh, it'll be fine, you know? So right. From there, is it the typical permitting process where the facility has basically a rebuttal and they can redesign to meet those requirements?
Yeah, exactly. So in other words,
give up.
So yeah, in other words, once they figure out, then they also have to come up after with that round of public hearings, they have to go to a final environmental impact statement process. And the final will basically say, yes, like if you build this facility, you have to do it this way. You have to mitigate this impact, you know, basically, could start making it a very expensive project potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, like I said, coal dust falls off of coal trains. Maybe one of the things they would have to do if they're going to build that facility would be cover those trains. And that's going to make their price tag go up. And making the price tag goes up just means they're, you know, internalizing their costs, you know, instead of just getting away with, what the heck? We don't need to cover the darn train. Nobody's going to make mm-hmm. us do anything about it. That would take us time and be expensive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if we spill coal everywhere. I mean, yeah. Think about a semi truck going on the highway and just stuff falling off of it. Like, that doesn't make sense. Why can the rail industry get away with that? Anyway.
Yeah. So that's, so now, you know, cause I see a decent amount of coal trains passing through. Like I said, I'm sitting at work watching these trains.
Yeah.
Where are the ones that are currently passing through going?
Good question. So there are, I believe that coal, we see about 5 or 6 trains a day currently with coal. And they're going, there's a coal-fired power plant in Washington and one in Oregon that are scheduled to be decommissioned. So they're getting their coal by from those trains. And so soon we're slated to see less coal trains coming through here. And then there's also a smaller export facility near Vancouver, British Columbia. But I believe that is pretty limited in terms of its ability to expand. So the facilities proposed in Washington State would be the largest on the continent of their kind. If they were built individually, they'd be the largest. So we're not talking about a drop in the bucket, you know, another couple trains or something. Mm-hmm. We're talking about an order of magnitude more coal trains every day if these facilities are operating.
Wow. Do you know, this is probably not... so I really love taking Amtrak around, or I have in the past. The schedules have been ruined. I mean, like, because Amtrak doesn't receive priority. Moving people is less important than moving this coal and crude and everything, apparently. And they look like they might be running closer to on time now. But do you know, is Amtrak involved at all? Can they be involved in lobbying on this issue, or is that, is rail infrastructure for people, which actually is rather efficient, you know, as far as mass transit.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a lot more efficient than buses or burning gasoline. Where does that factor in? Has that been part of the conversation?
Not really. Not that I've, you know, I haven't seen Amtrak weigh in on this issue at all, but they are being severely impacted. Our rail lines are already too full. And so, like you said, they're taking kind of the back seat. They're a lower priority. They're not as they don't make as much money as, let's say, a train full of oil that's 110 cars long. And they're getting pushed off the tracks, but not just people. Trains are getting pushed off the tracks, but also other products like wheat and other agricultural products that we produce in this region are taking a back seat and are not getting to where they need to go on time either. We had a gentleman come out who's an expert on rail, the rail economy. And, you know, he was saying already like that there's been a couple examples of, you know, for example, there was some fertilizer that wasn't getting to farmers on time. And so the first time in I think forever, so I think for the first time ever, the Surface and Transportation Board had to issue like an order to the rail lines to say, whoa, you got to get that fertilizer to these customers or else. Like, they issued an order because they were just neglecting getting those products to the farmers because other commodities like oil and coal were taking precedent or priority, excuse me.
So, and meanwhile, I'm going to make an assumption that I hope you have more information than me about. Traditionally, the fossil fuel industry has been the beneficiary of huge amounts of corporate welfare subsidy from the U.S. government, tax exemptions, things like that. I'm not sure how that looks in the coal industry, but I think it's safe to assume that, so these are private companies who are profiting immensely from using what's traditionally been considered public infrastructure,
right?
The rail infrastructure that had been neglected for most of the century and is now being used at such a high level. Do you know, I mean, are they even paying their fair share to maintain this infrastructure?
Well, the rail itself is pretty much private. Like, it's not like the rail, because of how the rail lines were developed, you know, way back in, you know, when we were trying to develop the western part of the country, a lot of the laws are set up to let them do whatever they want and give them, you know, free will to, you know, so they have a lot of power and they can, they have a lot of freedom to do kind of what they will on the rail lines. But one particular thing that I would point out about the coal industry and especially the exports proposals that have come up, the land that would be mined for this coal, you know, needs to be leased by the federal government to the coal industry. And when they made the pricing system for this leasing program, they didn't anticipate there being exports. They anticipated it being used domestically. So they made, so this legally speaking, this land needs to, and those resources need to be used in the best interest of the American people. And when the prices were set, it was for the use of American people to burn. And now we don't want to burn it as much anymore. And so the coal industry is kind of trying to take advantage of this incredibly low pricing that they can get the coal for. But it wouldn't be used in the best interests of the American people. The American people are moving away from wanting coal to be burnt. We want to keep it in the ground. And the industry is like, ooh, look, it's super cheap. Let's see if we can just shove it over into an Asian market and create demand over there before, you know, the industry is basically dying. And their last kind of scramble right now is to see if they can create demand overseas for U.S. coal. Mm. But the leasing system is messed up right now.
Okay. So, and I guess I was confused. I do forget that the rails are private, but many of them have, much of the railroad infrastructure has easement and goes through public land, national parks. I know that, you know, the rail line goes across the border of Glacier, other national parks. So that's kind of where the weaknesses are, it seems, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Areas affected by treaties and areas that are state land, federal land.
Yeah.
Which there's no shortage of out here. So
definitely. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely, it is a fight against government subsidies and making sure that the government doesn't subsidize coal. So specifically there was actually, we just had a good, a win in Oregon. There was this program that I'm not super familiar with, but it's called Connect Oregon. And it's basically a way to funnel public money to help with, you know, subsidizing projects. But, you know, those, that funding was attempted to be funneled over to coal export work, coal export projects, and that was actually stopped by the people, by, you know, a grassroots movement of people to say, no, we don't want this in our state.
Awesome. So we've only got about 7 minutes
left.
Holy cow. I know, right? What else do you want to make sure that people know?
Okay.
As we
Well, please, first and foremost, come to the Totem Pole Blessing Ceremony tomorrow, Tuesday the 26th at 11 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. John's. It's going to be, you know, we'll have our city council president there, leaders from the Spokane tribe and other regional tribes. And we're going to bless a totem pole on its journey across the Northwest, and it was carved to raise awareness about the dirty and dangerous coal and oil export facilities that have been proposed in the Northwest and how that can directly impact the land, the water, and the peoples of the Northwest. And free event, open to the public, very family friendly, 11 a.m. at the Cathedral of St. John's. And you can find out more at Coal Free Spokane on Facebook or totempolejourney.com. So that's a great place to, or an event not to be missed and a really, really wonderful thing to be a part of. And also, if you want to volunteer to make a difference and help build our grassroots movement against coal and oil in the Inland Northwest, then get a hold of me. Or just check out the Coal Free Spokane Facebook page. So if you wanted to learn about volunteer opportunities, you can call me at 209-2395 or Coal Free Spokane Facebook, I think are the best ways.
Great. And I'll share that page in the podcast notes, which will be up later today at praxisradio509.podomatic.com, which you can find, if that's a mouthful, on KYRS's website, kyrs.org. What kind of volunteer opportunities are there as far as ongoing help?
Okay.
For the campaign.
Yeah. So, as I said, we're helping to build this grassroots movement, and that pretty much involves talking to people. So, to organize our community, we have to talk to each other. And so one conversation after another, needs to happen. And that can happen through, you know, helping by tabling at things like the farmer's market. I'm actually about ready to do a big push to, get people to help table at Pig Out in the Park. So things like that. We also do phone banking. We sit down and we make phone calls to people, because if you don't talk to, you know, sending out lots of emails to people only has so much impact. You know, we all get so much email. So if you really want to inform people and educate them and get them to do something, you have to either talk to them face to face, talk to them on the phone, things like that. So we also have some data entry work if you'd rather sit in front
if
of a computer
and
do some typing and stuff like that. So we have to, you know, boil all that information about who we talk to and when and about what. We have to keep track of that so we can follow up with people. You know, we're going to be planning events. So I should say a quick save the date for September 24th. We're going to have an event about our Coal Free Avista campaign. We're going to educate people about Avista using 20% coal power for their electric generation, and how we can help influence their 20-year planning process to move towards wind, solar, and energy efficiency. So September 24th, say the date, Gonzaga Law School. And where was I going?
Awesome. No, that's great. I'm glad that, because I don't think we got all the way there when we were talking about Avista earlier.
Oh, no problem.
And if people missed that. So, yeah. So September 24th. And then the other important date is tomorrow, Tuesday, the 26th, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. If you end up missing it and you're really passionate, you could follow the Lummi community to the coast.
Yeah, you could. And up you to Alberta. Yeah.
Tailgate.
So,
I don't know. Mm-hmm. But
totempolejourney.com has all the information about that journey. And we're helping to support it locally. And I'm doing what I can to invite people.
Awesome. So, again, if you're just joining us, you've been listening to Praxis on KYRS, talking to Jace Bailenga, organizer with the Beyond Coal campaign of the Sierra Club. Do you want to add anything else? What's your favorite thing about doing environmental organizing and coal, anti-coal organizing?
My favorite thing? I think, you know, just those unexpected moments where, yeah, I mean, I really love just talking to everybody about the issue. Some conversations are more pleasant than others, but for the most part, it's just an issue that I think people understand, and they get that it's a threat to our community. And, you know, for example, I mean, just random unexpected times where I run into people and they just are just really excited to get involved. Like, for example, I was getting a drink before the show across the street at the main market, and the cashier actually noticed my Climate Action Now t-shirt and said, "How can I get involved?" And I was like, let me do the radio show and I'll come back for lunch.
Oh, nice.
And then I'll tell you. So just moments like that where, you know, you don't expect people to get excited and want to help out, and they do. That's probably my favorite part of it.
So you have a wide array of coal related t-shirts. I'm imagining.
I have three different kinds of t-shirts now. We've got a snazzy teal Climate Action Now shirt. We've got a red Beyond Coal Export shirt and a yellow Beyond Coal shirt.
And stickers too,
and
right?
Stickers,
I mean,
yes,
stuff like that. I don't think you can, since we're so inundated with advertising, it's you can do your own advertising that's kind of anti-consumer,
right.
Anti-corporate. I saw some good usage of that at the KYRS Music Fest.
Awesome.
It was the last place I saw you tabling.
Yeah, that was a great event.
And you stayed late and kept tabling.
I did.
I
was the, yes, I was definitely the last table. But I kind of wanted to just listen to the music anyway, so yeah. I thought I'd keep my table up.
Well, there you go. Is there any last note you want to give to people one more time on that date?
Yes, so Totem Pole Blessing Ceremony tomorrow, the 26th, 11 a.m. till 12:30 p.m., Cathedral of St. John's, which is up at Grand and 12th. It's going to be a beautiful day. Bring your family. Hope to see you there.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Kind of. Now I know more about coal, and so does everyone else. And this podcast will be up later today. By this afternoon, I'll be vague. KYRS.org programs Praxis. You can find the link to the podcast archive there. You can also find it on Facebook.com/Praxis Radio. I will put the link to the Coal Free Spokane page up there as well. I've already shared the event there. So if you're looking for the details again, if you didn't get them, you can RSVP on Facebook. You can share that event with your friends. It's public, so you can invite more people digitally as well.
All right. Yeah. Hope to see everybody there.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And I will be back next week talking about a subject that's yet to be determined. So it'll be a surprise show next week. Thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.